We're in deepest Texas.
Well, yes. We're not too far from the border with Mexico.
This is a journey into your past.
Well, I realized that the whole thing didn't make any sense. Why were we here? I mean, we didn't do anything. It's just the stupid politics, the war and all that. It's just hard to believe that something like this could happen.
There's a lot of emotions going through your head at the moment.
Yes, mostly because I remember my mother. What she had to go through. And the whole thing started right here.
Right here at Crystal City?
Crystal City, yeah.
Eric Gehrman drives down a straight Texas road that takes him to his childhood in an internment camp. A sign points to the town from which the camp takes its name, Crystal City, a scattering of houses and petrol stations in the scrubland. When Eric first came here, he was 5 years old. It was 1943. America was at war. Eric's father was German-born. That meant the family's new home was behind tall fences in a guarded compound. Here we are.
Well, we're here in the campsite. Everything has changed. I noticed that the little barracks are not here anymore.
We're in a patch of open ground. There's a little stadium over there, warehouses and so on. There's a memorial over here,
yes.
Eric. Here we are. It's a cube set on a stone here in this field. World War II concentration camp.
Right. 1943 to 1946. We were here for 1 year before they took us to Germany. Do you mind reading it?
Due to circumstances beyond their control and consequences of a war between the United States and Japan, peoples of Japanese ancestry, both nationals and U.S. citizens alike, were arbitrarily and without justification incarcerated in a concentration camp at this location during World War II. Eric, it says peoples of Japanese ancestry. It says nothing about people of German descent. Does this memorial include you?
No. No, it doesn't. Just because your father was German, it doesn't say anything about it.
This memorial is the result of a successful campaign by Japanese internees, their families and descendants. They've received an official government apology. No one said sorry to Eric Gehrman. No American government has ever acknowledged in law that any Germans were held. But 10,905 Germans, their wives and children, were interned at Crystal City and more than 40 other camps across the US. And as the war ended, not everyone was released.
I felt that during the war I could be interned. But when that war ended, and I was still interned for 2.5 years after that, I really resent that, and I resent that to this very day.
Eberhard Fuhr's home in suburban Chicago could hardly be more American. The Stars and Stripes flies outside. Inside, there's a brunch party. Everyone here is a proud U.S. citizen. Yet they all share a secret history. Over muffins and coffee, they're talking about the war years, behind a tall fence, guarded by American soldiers at Crystal City. Eb, as everyone calls him, was just 17. He met his wife Barbara in the camp.
Okay, guys, before age, gravity, and loss of hair had any effect, here's a picture.
Eb pulls out an old photograph. Brown with age, it shows a group of young people in the sun outside a small brick house. It's proof that there were Germans at Crystal City, there even after the war had ended.
This would have been had to be about 1946.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Wait, isn't it?
Where, honey?
George Reinbold?
This is Reinbold.
Great. Yeah.
Okay, who else? Teddy Werner, Gary Fuhr,
Bruno Kupp, Julius Fuhr, Günter Vogel,
and
Eberhard Fuhr.
That guy's
that'd be me. That'd be
the best looking one there.
Absolutely. I had hair.
I married the best looking
one. Yeah, whatever happened.
I grew up in a German family in Cincinnati. I sang in a Kinderchor, which is all German, and Doris Day was in the Kinderchor with me.
Really?
Yeah, because her father was the director of the Kinderchor. Her real name is Koppelhof.
Then war breaks out. What happens to the young Erb Fuhr?
Before the war broke out, the United States passed an Alien Registration Act. That was 1940. I was 15 at the time, so I had to register as an alien.
Tell me your name.
I'm Ben.
Ben?
Yeah, okay. Student first year.
Great. In the undergraduate?
Yes.
Yeah. Where are you from?
Professor David Cole signs copies of his new book, a history of how America treats what it regards as hostile foreigners. He's a leading specialist in civil liberties and the law. But even in his work, there's scant acknowledgement of what happened to Erb Fuhr, his friends, and the thousands of other German and German-Americans like them, all officially classified as enemy aliens.
Well, the phrase actually dates back to 1798, when Congress enacted something called the Enemy Alien Act. The Enemy Alien Act gave the president the power to lock up during wartime any national of a country with which we were at war.
Professor Cole is far from neutral about this law. For him, it's about how America has always responded to threats of war and crisis.
The enemy alien statute and the treatment of enemy aliens during World War I, during World War II, is such a perfect example of the way that we so often respond during periods of crisis. We respond by targeting foreigners, treating them as the, quote, enemy, and denying them basic human rights. And what is so troubling about it is the way in which it allows the government to target people, to lock people up, to treat people as suspect, not based on evidence, not based on any cold, hard facts showing that they've engaged in some sort of dangerous activity or espionage or any criminal activity, but merely on the basis of suspicion, and often suspicion grounded in little more than ethnic identity.
The FBI came for Eberhard Fuhr at his school. They picked up his older brother at work. Their parents and another younger child were already at Crystal City. The charges against Erb Fuhr were never entirely clear. One appears to relate to a claim that at the age of 12, he'd sent something positive about Adolf Hitler. The Fuhr brothers were taken to a hearing. A newspaper headline already had the result.
While I was waiting outside the hearing room, I was reading the Cincinnati Inquirer, and it said brothers were arrested, and that today they will have a hearing, and they will be interned. The hearing was really predetermined because there were no witnesses for or against, because they only read statements that people would call in or allegations that were made with no names ever attached and no dates really attached either. I had a cousin about my own age, and of course he was in the German military, and they were afraid apparently, what if your cousin Werner came up the Ohio River in a submarine and knocked on your door at 3 o'clock in the morning and asked for you to put him up? Well, you know, I was kind of a smart aleck too, though, and I said, I don't think a submarine could come up the Ohio River, because the Ohio River in a lot of places only drafts something like 6 to 8 feet, and it would be kind of visible all the way from New Orleans to Cincinnati.
What did you think? Because you were a German-American, but from what you've said, you weren't a Nazi at all.
Never been a Nazi, no. Because like I said, my father, he brought us up to love our native country, because I was born there, outside of Cologne. But we were never really Nazis.
The Cincinnati Inquirer's report was right. The hearing did order the brothers to be interned. They were loaded onto a heavily guarded train, along with 1,000 or so others. The journey was south, to Texas and Crystal City. If the brothers hadn't been exposed to Nazi doctrine before, ironically enough, they would be now.
There was the whole gamut of political thought from the left to the far right. And at one point, they had the Nazi flag removed, and that became a cause celeb with the what they call the protecting power, which was the Swiss. And they pointed out that under the Geneva Convention, the inmates have a right to fly the flag they want.
So the swastika was flying?
At one point, yes. Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I didn't give it a thought. I just, that was the German flag. The Japanese flew their rising sun flag over their school buildings.
Back at Crystal City now, there's no sign of those buildings. Some dispute whether the Nazi flag was flown at all. Eric German, brought here aged 5, doesn't remember. He's continuing his look around the remains of the camp that became his childhood home. And his story, it turns out, contains 2 further twists. Because Eric was born in the Latin American country of Costa Rica. That was where he and his family, including his German father, were detained. The US had settled a deal with all Latin American countries. All Germans living there could be interned in the United States. 4,000 of them were. And the second twist, some internees were to be deported to wartime Germany. Eric, tell me what happened to your family. We're back now, what, in the early 40s?
I was 5 years old, and I spent a whole year here with my family and 6 more years in Germany during the war, which affected me a lot in every way. In Germany, because we spoke Spanish, they discriminated against us. And after the war, when we finally got to Costa Rica, they discriminated against us again because we only spoke German. I lost 7 years of my life that I could have learned a lot, being somebody. But that's life. That's it.
Should we take a walk around the camp?
Sure.
And as our walk continues, we meet a man who's become an old friend to many of the former internees, a campaigner for this secret history to be officially recognized, taught in American schools even.
Hello, Eric.
Hey,
nice
buddy.
To see you again.
How are you doing?
How are you?
Okay.
Nigel Ranch from the BBC.
Nigel, pleasure meeting you. I'm Richard Santos. I'm the chairman of the Zavala County Historical Commission, and I want to welcome you to Zavala County in Crystal City, Texas. We're now standing at the northeast corner of the camp.
Where then is the fence from here?
Completely around the 500 and some odd acres.
That would be what? Just over here behind us?
Right behind us, about, what would you say, about 500 meters?
There'd be a tall fence that would be patrolling, that have machine guns.
Right. And men on horseback patrolling the fence.
Then just in front of us, row upon row
of cabins, and of course the schools, the hospital, the sports area, the orchards are directly south and east from where we're standing.
The filming of the Crystal City facility shows how men, women, and children, detainees of World War II, lived, worked, and played under traditional American standards of decent and humane treatment.
Here is a party of women and children arriving in Crystal City. Practically all of the children and many women were American-born.
A wartime propaganda film designed to show that conditions for internees at Crystal City were the best possible.
Young America. About 250 Americans were born in this hospital.
You know, there was interaction with other families. As kids, we were able to play with other children. We sort of had like a kindergarten-type get-together. There was this big pool where we were able to swim because it was beastly hot down there.
Günter Graeber was another internee, American-born with German parents who had never taken him to their homeland. For a mischievous little boy, the community at Crystal City was not necessarily unpleasant. The fun and games at the camp, though, were not to last. A terrifying journey lay ahead.
One nice morning, which was in January of 1945, we went back on the train again, went back up to New York, back up to Ellis Island, and then within 3 days, we were put on the steamer, the Gripsholm, which was a Swedish neutral ship, which then transported, it was like 800 or 900 of German former internees or German aliens or whatever they called us, back to Germany to be exchanged for American internees in Germany. It was like a one-to-one exchange, an interchange.
You were an American, though. You were.
I was an American citizen, but it didn't matter. I was part of the German family. Being children of German aliens and nationals, we had absolutely no rights.
On behalf of the National Park Service and the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island Ferry System, once again, welcome aboard.
The tourist ferry from Manhattan to Ellis Island. Thousands make this journey every day to remember how a new American life began for generations of immigrants.
Welcome to Ellis Island!
There was no hearty greeting for the young Eberhard Fuhr when he arrived here. It was 1947. The war was over. Crystal City was being dismantled. Most of its internees were being released. But many of German descent were shipped to Ellis Island, where they lived in dormitories, held without explanation. Herr Fuhr was among them.
Every afternoon when we'd go out in the recreation time and sit out there on the terrace, one could see the back of the Statue of Liberty. And it always looked like it just felt that liberty and freedom had turned its back on us, you know.
There's so many stories connected with Ellis Island, and World War II is shown here.
Barry Moreno is historian and librarian on Ellis Island. He's writing an encyclopedia of the place.
During World War II, arrested enemy aliens and their families were detained in the main building on Ellis Island, while the Coast Guard took up residence in the baggage and dormitory building.
It says nothing here about the 4,000 to 6,000 German enemy aliens, many of them innocent, who were held. We have the tour groups all around us getting one history of Ellis Island. You're doing an alternative special tour for us today, which is this secret history of the Second World War and these enemy aliens staying here.
Well, remember, it was confidential in wartime. It was high security. Enemy aliens was not just ordinary immigrants. So, yes, you're right. It has a certain secret aspect to it because it was national security.
The question that Barry Moreno asks is one of innocence or guilt. What did the Germans and German-Americans who were held on Ellis Island during and after the Second World War do? Were they in fact innocent? Was their internment justified?
You must remember, a lot of people will try to whitewash and refuse to admit that there was evidence. The fact there was evidence. These people were not held. Maybe the evidence was skewed wrong, maybe it was unfair and misinterpreted, but there was evidence.
Evidence of Nazi sympathies? Fascist sympathies? That's what you're telling me?
That's correct. There was evidence or accusations of Nazi. Doesn't mean that was true.
You and Mom, and you're in Steele, North Dakota, where the railroad went through and where you spent some time helping to replace the rails.
At her home in New Hampshire, Karen Ebel is leafing through some photographs with her father, Max.
Does it look familiar?
Yep, I look familiar.
Yeah. Wow.
This is no ordinary family album.
It's pretty amazing to bring you back there.
60 years made a lot of big difference there.
You look like you belong there.
No, I belong right here.
Yeah.
Max Ebel is another of the German-born wartime internees. The pictures are of the railway in North Dakota that during the war he helped to build as part of a prison work gang. He volunteered to join the railroaders, as they were known, rather than be kept in a camp with the other internees. It's only been in recent years that he's told his children exactly what happened. It's as if there's a shame attached to these experiences. Max Ebel says he was no Nazi.
I was born in Germany June 1st, 1919, and I immigrated into United States in 1937. As I grew up in Germany, I was pretty much for freedom. The Hitler Youth became a very powerful group. I didn't want to join it, so the Hitler Youth and I didn't see eye to eye, and we just fought.
When you say you fought, you mean you physically had a fight with them?
Physical fight. There's the scar. I mean, over in Germany, I left Germany from getting away from the Nazism. And over here, I was a Nazi.
They said, I mean, the wording is that you, what is it? You were a dangerous enemy alien. Yeah. How do you feel now about that?
Actually, I feel fine with it. I was an enemy alien.
Were you dangerous?
No, I guess not.
Karen Ebel learnt this story in fragments over the years. She was a lawyer working on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. A quick study of legislation showed no apology, no legal recognition of what had happened to people like her father. Karen Ebel has taken this as her campaign. She wants a law that will set up a commission to review the treatment of Germans and German-Americans held during the Second World War. The bill that she's written is slowly making its way through the American Congress and Senate.
The campaign, I guess, it's definitely become about more than my father. It's about all these people who were wronged. It just seems to me that this story needs to be told to make us all realize how sacred freedom is. I mean, that's what it's about to me. My father is 84. You know, he's in good shape, but one doesn't know what could happen from day to day. And obviously, I desperately want to get this bill passed in his lifetime.
What of Barry Moreno's view on Ellis Island? Were some of the internees guilty of Nazi associations?
I know that there were people who were interned who were Nazis, I mean, who believed in Nazism. I know that there were people who were pro-German. None of them was ever convicted of spying or threatening the government in any real way. They were just slapped into these camps. The problem is that in capturing the small percentage of people who might have presented a larger threat, the government cast a dragnet out that dragged a lot of other people in that didn't belong there, and they affected so many families in so many really terrible ways.
Karen Ebel's bill is not just about the past. The proposed commission would ask whether the Enemy Aliens Act should remain on the statute book. It would investigate how to protect civil liberties in times of national crisis.
So we have fun times, we have sad times.
Yeah, we have good times, we have bad times.
Texas was fun, Germany was a nightmare, and coming back to this country was, like I said, I would never in a million years come back.
Neither would I.
In a small house in Queens in New York, there's a family that knows only too well this dilemma. Where in a democracy should freedom of the individual be curtailed for the perceived safety of society at large?
Let's face it, we have to understand that America went to war with Germany, and they didn't know which is the good guy and which is the bad guy. Do we trust him or don't we trust him? And let's be on the safe side and we'll intern him. I see, I'm looking at both sides, you know, so for the Americans to be safe also. Because as you know, look at all the terrorists that's going on in this world now. If they would have maybe taken some of these guys down and said, well, you're a bad guy, let's put you in internment camp because that's where you're safe. That's what they did with the Germans.
Tilly Bussey talks at a kitchen table over coffee. Her sister, Charlotte Dimling, and Charlotte's son, Rudy, are listening. During the Second World War, the authorities came first for Charlotte and Tilly's father, who was German-born. Then they came for the two sisters. Tilly says she understands why. Charlotte takes a sip of coffee before replying.
No, I disagree. I disagree. My father was taken away. There was no income. We didn't know where to go.
Do you believe your father had done anything wrong?
Absolutely no. not.
But
absolutely
they didn't take
not.
A chance. They couldn't take a chance. How did they know?
Throughout this exchange, Rudy Dimling, Charlotte's son, has remained silent. Until September the 11th, 2001, this debate was a matter of family history. Intriguing family history, but just history. Now, that's all changed.
My brother was lost in the World Trade Center. And that period of time for the last 2 years have been excruciatingly difficult for all of us to come to grips with. The parallels, you can't help but think that there are parallels. So for me to bridge the present and the past has been, I can't imagine anyone who has gone in this country, who's gone through that bridge, who has a link to the past and the present like I do. You can't help but have some sense of hostility. Maybe not necessarily hostility, there's some apprehension. And you want to make sure that that tragedy which happened will not happen again. But at the same time, hearing my mother's story and my aunt's story and going back to Crystal City and hearing their stories of everyone who was encamped, of how their dignity was taken away from them, how their lives were taken away from them. The other side of that coin is you don't want to see happen to innocent people today what happened to innocent people 60 years ago.
I still can see my dad. I still can see in the middle of the night people coming into our homes. I can still see my dad being taken away. And that I don't understand.